Our episodes contain graphic information and at times strong language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Would you like some murder with your coffee?
Welcome to Morning Murders. I'm Nicole.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Brenna. We're just three gals that like to sit around, drink coffee, and talk about true crime.
True crime and coffee.
And coffee and true crime.
That's our jam.
Our jam and coffee.
I mean, if you like jam.
Yeah. I like jam. I put jam on toast.
Yeah. I'm a cream cheese and jelly person.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do that. I do that on my bagels.
Okay, but guys, I'm going to warn you. All right. My husband makes these magical sandwiches, and you're going to gain 1,000,000 pounds. You're welcome. Take an Eggo waffle, put apricot jelly on it, put a piece of ham on it.
Yes, keep going.
Put another Eggo waffle, another thing of jam, another ham, another Eggo waffle. And thank me later.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, great. I can find vegan hams.
Yeah, there's vegan hams.
Yeah, there's vegan cream cheese.
They're incredible.
Vegan hams. I can do all this stuff.
It sounds weird, but it's delightful.
That actually sounds really good.
That's real good.
Yeah. I enjoy using waffles as bread.
Everybody should. What else are they there for?
Come waffle on. Bread.
Waffle bread.
Waffle bread.
Sorry, I'm getting off topic.
No, that's all right. Now I'm hungry. ladies and beans, first of all, I would just like to say that I'm so glad that we're just three gals who like to sit around, drink coffee, and talk about true crime.
Yeah.
And most importantly, I'm so very glad we are more than just three best friends. We're also brothers.
Brothers!
Okay, enough of that. So let's get to that true crime part, shall we? Now, when I saw this pop up, I thought it was a different case, which I'm also going to tell you guys about later. I'm going to bring it to the breakfast nook, so don't worry. But ladies and beans, have you ever heard of Skylar Neese?
Wait, yes.
Okay, don't tell me.
Okay.
Let's see if you know what it, if it is. All right, so Skylar Neese was born February 10th, 1996 in Star City, West Virginia. Her parents are David, or Dave, he goes by Dave a lot, and Mary Neese. She giggled all the time, she had a smile that could light up the room, and she was super smart beyond her years. She loved to read. She had dreams of becoming a criminal lawyer, which I thought was really amazing.
I thought you were just going to say criminal. So
a criminal. Dreams of becoming a criminal.
Becoming a criminal lawyer.
Yeah.
She had a job at Wendy's that she absolutely loved. And above everything else, she loved her friends. She valued her friendships and would go above and beyond for all of her friends. Morgan Lawrence was her first friend ever. They met when they were very little and came to call each other sisters. They even made promises to be in each other's wedding parties when they grew up. Her other two best friends were Sheila Eddy and Rachel Schulf. Her relationship with these two grew very strong in high school, and the three of them became the Three Musketeers. Skylar and Morgan began to drift away, and worse than that is Skylar would never get to see Morgan walk down the aisle. Skylar would never get to go to her prom or even graduate. Skylar's body was found 30 miles away from her home. She went missing on July 5th, 2012, and her body wasn't found until early 2013. Though Morgan and Skylar drifted apart, Morgan still considered her family. She didn't really like being around Rachel or Sheila and was worried that Skylar would get lost in their attitudes and lose sight of who she really was, this sweet, fun-loving, happy teen. Sheila and Skylar met a while before Rachel came along, but in high school it all seemed to click. And it felt as though they had known each other forever. When we are in high school, every type of relationship is just so intense. I remember feeling that everything was so important to make me, I get sick over stuff, right? My friend's mad at me, or my boyfriend's cheating on me. What do you get sick over stuff when you're in high school?
Yeah, it's all you've got up until that point, right? Like, that's all that your brain has experienced up until that point. Mm-hmm. So everything is so very much, and then hormones also.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Being a kid is hard.
It sucks.
It was said that Skylar was a big emotional support for Sheila and Rachel. The two of them had divorced parents and homes that weren't as stable as Skylar's. Sheila became close with the entire Neese family. She wouldn't even have to knock when she came over. She would just walk in like part of the family. Mary, Skylar's mom, said that she felt like Skylar thought she could save Sheila from her situations. Mary would often hear Skylar, as she would put it, give Sheila hell over the phone, saying things like, "Don't be stupid, what were you thinking?" Overall, though, Sheila was known for her carefree attitude, and a lot of people were drawn to that, especially Rachel. Rachel was the opposite of Sheila. She came from a very strict Catholic family, but also had dreams of becoming a Broadway star. She was very involved in theater as well as her church. Now, this case happened in 2012, so social media had been born, and it comes up a lot, social media. I have some tweets, some tweet quotes that I'll share as we go along, but there are also many, many more things that just is all over social media. So on July 5th, Skylar came home to her family's first floor apartment from work, told her parents that she loved them, and got ready for bed. But when her dad, Dave, went to go check on her the next morning, he was met with an empty room. No Skylar. Her parents reached out to her friends, including Sheila, and asked if they'd seen her, and everyone said no. Her parents also found that there was a small bench outside of her bedroom window, and her window screen was missing. At this point, Dave was really getting worried and called Skylar about 10 times, and he said he even left her messages saying, "You're in big trouble." He called Mary and expressed his concern, and she stayed calm and said, "Skylar has to be at work by 4 p.m. She loves being there. She won't miss it." They would call a few minutes after 4 to check on her. But Wendy's called first. Skylar did not show up to work. Now Mary and Dave were very worried. So Sheila called them and said that she had something to tell them. She had to tell them the truth. Skylar snuck out last night with her and Rachel. This wasn't a new thing for Skylar. She had snuck out once before with the girls, but they all got busted because they were out past the town's curfew. Sheila told Mary that Skylar had told them to drop her off at the end of the street around midnight so that her parents wouldn't hear her sneaking back in. The fear now was that someone had kidnapped Skylar on her short walk home from the end of the street. They decided they need to call the cops. So Dave makes the 911 call. He said, "I have a daughter that's 16 years old. Apparently, she snuck out of her room last night and hasn't been seen since. None of her friends can get a hold of her. I can't find her." So at this point, she's been gone for 24 hours. In Star City, there are around 2,228 residents in 2012. The Skylar Niece case starts, and Officer Jessica Colbank is assigned. At first, Skylar is thought to be a runaway. Her case didn't match what was currently necessary to issue an Amber Alert. There were four elements that needed to be met at the time to issue an Amber Alert. All four needed to be met. All of them. So, one, a child is believed to be abducted. There was no evidence showing that she had been abducted. In fact, there was a surveillance video found that actually showed Skylar leaving and willingly walking to a car at 12:30 a.m. Two, a child is under 18. This one she did meet the requirements of. She was only 16 years old. Three, the child may be in danger of death or serious injury. And four, there is significant information to indicate that the Amber Alert would be helpful. Also, there was a 48-hour waiting period for teens before they could be considered missing. So no Amber Alert is issued. Officer Jessica found that video I mentioned and showed the car pull up at 12:30 a.m. and then show Skylar walking across the parking lot to the car and getting into the back seat. It's in black and white and it's really grainy so they can't see the plate, but you can see what type of car it is. Yeah, you can see the shape and design of the car. So Sheila had confessed to Mary that they dropped her off at midnight. So whose car is this and where did Skylar go? Mary now thinks that Skylar came home and snuck out a second time. Sheila would come by and comfort Dave and Mary often. She even went around town with Mary on July 7th, handing out flyers, asking folks about Skylar. Rachel had started her Catholic summer camp and would be there now for a couple weeks. A friend of Sheila's named Chrissy witnessed how scared Sheila was for Skylar, and Dave went on the news to make a plea for Skylar. The weekend came and went, and there was still no sign of Skylar. When Sunday night hit, the family and her friends all started to feel like something really bad happened to her. There was a vigil held for Skylar, and it seemed like the entire town showed up. Rachel and Sheila were there crying, and Mary, who was dealing with her own grief, just felt so sad for the girls and wanted to comfort them. Morgan, Skylar's friend, who was like her sister I mentioned earlier, was away at camp and heard all the news from social media. Morgan wasn't the only one seeing things on social media. Officer Jessica was deep diving into the social media world and pulling whatever she could. There was also another officer on the team who was on social media posing as a teenage boy trying to see if he could find additional information. Officer Jessica also found that Skylar wasn't using her credit card or her phone, and her parents had told Jessica that all of Skylar's things were still at home, her charger, her toothbrush, clothes, so they started to think the idea of her running away was not what happened. Typically, right. You take those things, right?
Especially a teenager would want to take that stuff because they would just want to make sure they have it on them, right?
Exactly, yeah.
If they're planning on being gone for a long time.
Mm-hmm. So then the police finally got a lead. Turns out there'd been a bank robbery around the same time Skylar had gone missing in Blacksville, West Virginia. There was a rumor that there was a teenage party going on that night, and those bank robbers were there. There was talk of a possible overdose, and the teens panicked and hid the body. Some kids were saying they thought Skylar had overdosed on heroin. By now, a month had gone by. All the rumors were leading nowhere. The team was chasing down leads and rumors all over the United States, it seemed. But soon the evidence would finally lead them to the local high school, University High. Now, school was starting back up again, and there was a heaviness. Everyone was still worried about Skylar and what had really happened to her. Rachel and Sheila were starting to seem okay again, though. Social media was spiraling even more out of control, however. Still, there were rumors of Skylar overdosing, that friends must know more than they're leading on, that Skylar maybe secretly left the country. A student, a friend of Rachel's named Daniel, thought that maybe Sheila and Rachel were covering for Skylar or someone else. He would often tell Rachel that she really needs to say something if she knew anything. The two of them were in theater together, and he said that Skylar and Sheila would fight a lot, and quote, "One time sophomore year, me and Rachel were practicing for Pride and Prejudice, and Rachel had her phone up to her ear and she was laughing. She was like, listen to this. Sheila and Skylar are fighting, but Skylar didn't know Sheila had put them on a three-way call and Rachel was listening in." Did that ever happen to you guys, like secretly getting put on a three-way call?
So many times.
It's awful. Mm-hmm. It's just awful. I did a couple times it happened to me, and, like, then I always thought I was, then it was, like, the trust issue. I'm like, I'm always on a three-way call. Someone else is always on the line. There was one time a friend was asking me the typical, like, do you really like this person?
Oh,
like,
for sure.
You must hate her, right?
I did the same thing there. Yeah, to them as well.
And then there was another one where, like, the kid I had a crush on was, like, the secret one on the line. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think he's really cute? And I was like, yes. And he's like, I knew it. I was like, no.
Yeah.
No. So there were also these writers in town that were investigating the case, Darlene Berry and Jeffrey C. Fuller. They were investigating on social media and saw a bunch of posts of people saying that Rachel and Sheila must know something. Eyes were starting to fall onto Rachel and Sheila and what they might be hiding. Their friends continued to stand up for them, even when the FBI showed up at school. They wanted to talk to the two girls. And the investigation into Rachel and Sheila started. The task force seemed to constantly be asking them questions, so much to the point that Skylar's parents even stepped in and they were like, stop harassing these girls. Leave them alone. They've answered your questions. When Sheila was interviewed, she was always very calm and collected. She'd look you right in the face and she'd answer any question. Rachel was much more distracted. She'd look around, she'd draw on the desk, she'd play with her pencil, do any kind of thing to also distract, but answer questions. They both told the same story. They picked Skylar up, drove around Morgantown, which is within the Star City limits, smoked a little pot, and then dropped Skylar off a few blocks away from her home. Officer Jessica felt like something was off, though. She said their stories were verbatim the same. No one's story is exactly the same unless it's rehearsed. Everything in her gut was saying, Sheila's acting wrong, Rachel is scared to death. Now, just to throw my little two cents in here. Everyone acts different in extreme situations, even minor situations. Grief, happiness, fear, regret, all look different. It should never be the only thing that convicts a person. Evidence should be what convicts a person, not how they act. Just wanted to make sure I said that. And then, as if I wrote this case out, which I did, I typed it, this whole thing out, the evidence now comes into play. Whee! And it did not match the girl's story, which now seemed very much rehearsed. There was another surveillance video found with this car, which they've now realized is Sheila's. It matches the model. Like, so they can't do the license plate, but it's the same car.
Mm-hmm.
It was at a convenience store. They had stopped for a moment, and when they left, they went heading west, away from town and not east, into town like they said they were doing. They said they were driving around Morgantown. Lie. They were heading towards Blacksville, which was where the bank robberies were. The police also were able to find that Rachel's cell phone pinged off a cell tower in Blacksville. With all that coming to light, Skylar's parents started to think, maybe the girls do know more than they're leading on. They started to try little things to get them to talk. They would, like, Mary would make posts on social media about karma and, like, things like that that she knew the girls would see, just trying to, like, poke them a little bit to get them to talk. You know, social media, teens.
That must be so insane to, like, have the police come to you and say, like, okay, we have this overwhelming evidence that your daughter's friends are, like, very much more involved than they say they are, and they must know they do, and here's the evidence or whatever it is, and to just have to, like, sit on it. Yeah. Knowing that those little shits, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Then, in late November of 2012, Rachel changes her story. She went to the police and said that they did go to Blacksville, that Skylar had said to drop her off there. The next day, wouldn't you know it, Sheila also changes her story to the exact same thing. Rachel starts to get more and more upset at school and at home. The holidays come and go, and Skylar's parents don't celebrate any of it. It's too heartbreaking to do without Skylar. It's now been 6 months that she's been missing. Then Sheila and Rachel start to become more secluded. Then they stop going to school at all. Rachel is getting worse and worse until finally she snaps. On December 28th, Rachel's mother calls 911. She says, "I have an issue with a 16-year-old daughter of mine. I mean, I can't control her anymore. Give me the phone." You can hear Rachel in the background screaming at her mother. "No, no, this is over. My husband is trying to contain her. Please hurry." So, and again, her parents are divorced, so this is her stepfather. Rachel is taken to a mental health facility, and after a few days, she wants to talk to the police again with a lawyer. Mm-hmm. She meets with the police, Officer Ronnie Gatskins? Yeah, Officer Ronnie Gatskins, who joined the team pretty early on. He does the interview. So she has a bucket with her because she's afraid she might throw up. He starts to ask her questions like, "Was there a party? Did she overdose?" Then Rachel just brings her head up. Her face gets red. She glances at him and she says, "We stabbed her." Ladies and beans, go grab a cup of that comforting, wonderful elixir of life we call coffee, because here comes the murder. Beans! I wanted to take a moment to talk about a company that I love very much. It's called Adventure Dog Coffee Company. Not only do they offer a specialty-grade coffee that is roasted fresh to order, literally it is some of the best beans I've had the honor to brew for the Breakfast Nook, 20% of the proceeds from that coffee goes to train rescue dogs as specialty service dogs for veterans. To learn more about this incredible company and order your bag of coffee today, visit adventuredogcoffee.co. Use special promo code MURDER, that's MURDER, at checkout to receive a 20% discount just for being a bean. You can also check out their link in our show notes. Now, let's get back to the show. Everyone went silent, speechless. Rachel begins to confess to everything. Rachel and Sheila had planned Skylar's murder for about a month. They had been in science class when they agreed that maybe they should kill her, and they decided that July 5th was the ideal time to do it. Early on July 5th, Rachel got the shovel from her dad's house, the two girls got cleaning supplies and a change of clothes, Sheila got kitchen knives from her house, and they put it all in the trunk of Sheila's car. They did not drop Skylar off down the street from her home at midnight. They picked her up at 12:30 a.m. to drive around and hang out, or so that's what they told her. Mm. They drove for about an hour, about 30 minutes from Skylar's home, just outside of Blacksville, which is technically Pennsylvania. They parked the car, got out to sit and just talk and smoke pot. And at some point, Sheila says she forgot the lighter in the car. And Skylar got up to get it, and it was at that moment that Rachel turned to Sheila and said, "On three." She counted down, and then they both started to stab Skylar in the back. She fought to defend herself and even got away for a moment before they stabbed her in the knee to make it impossible for her to get any further. Skylar looked at them and said, "Why?" right before she died. Rachel told the police that they covered her body with dirt and branches, put their bloody clothes in the trunk, put clean ones on, and left, leaving Skylar's body there. So Officer Ronnie asked Rachel how she felt after what she had done. And Rachel told him that it was something she wanted to get done before she left for church camp. He asked her why they did it, and she didn't really give him a specific answer, just that they didn't like her. And he asked her to clarify what she meant by that, and she just said, "Oh, nothing. We just didn't like her." After Rachel's confession, she led them to the place that it all happened. There, the police found scattered human remains. They carefully gathered the body and sent it off to a lab for testing. The police did not reveal the details of this confession right away, not even to Skylar's parents. They needed to corroborate Rachel's story first. She'd already lied to them a couple of times, so they wanted to make sure that she was telling the truth.
Right, because there's a whole second person involved that they have to make sure it doesn't get off for some weird reason. Yeah.
Yeah. They did inform the parents that they'd found remains they believed to be Skylar. The family was completely devastated. As February 2013 came, they celebrated Skylar's birthday and her life. They also quietly told Morgan and her family. The police now had a plan to use Rachel to get Sheila to confess. They set up secret cameras in Rachel's home and had Rachel invite Sheila over. They stayed nearby, but out of sight, just in case anything bad happened. So Sheila came over, and the girls spent a good amount of time together, took selfies, and talked about nothing important. Sheila posted their selfie on social media and wrote, "Finally got to see Rach!" Fortunately, the plan was a bust. The girls did not talk about anything specific enough for the police to use. In the meantime, though, the FBI were able to get a warrant. They took all the kitchen knives from Sheila's home and her car. In the car search, they found DNA, blood, in the trunk. They sent that to the lab for testing, and if it came back to match Skylar, they could directly link her to Skylar's death. The human remains testing came back around this time, and it confirmed that it was the body of Skylar. The parents and the high school was informed. Sheila was crying, asking her friends, "Who do you think did this? Why would they do this?" To everyone around her, it seemed like she was very, very upset about Skylar. On her social media, she posted about how it was the worst day of her life, and another one that said, "Rest easy, Skylar. You'll always be my best friend. I miss you more than you could ever know," with pictures of them together. Her page told two different stories, though. Her posts were to the extremes, both mourning her best friend and also totally carefree, with Rachel even. The investigation continued and the girls continued to post online. Rachel wrote, "I need a mimosa, ...... 10. Sheila posted prom photos, but they were officially suspects in Skylar's murder. People in town started gossiping, wondering why they hadn't been arrested yet. Sheila posted, "Ain't no rest for the wicked," and, "We really did go on 3. But again, this confession information wasn't out yet, so nobody knew what that meant. It was just a weird, vague post that Sheila was making. So Sheila doesn't even know Rachel's confessed everything yet. It almost seemed like Sheila was playing with the police even. She'd walk into interviews like it was no big thing, and then she'd just leave once they were done talking to her. But the attitude quickly shifted once Ronnie got the confirmation that the DNA in Sheila's trunk matched Skylar. The police went to Skylar's parents with this official case update. Then on May 1st, 2013, in exchange for her cooperation with the police, Rachel pleaded guilty to second-degree murder. Then the police took off to serve the murder warrant to Sheila Eddy. She was at the local Cracker Barrel having lunch with her mother. She was arrested for first-degree murder in the parking lot. She pleaded not guilty. Everyone wanted to know why the girls did it. It filled the halls of the school, and suddenly new truths were coming to light. Sheila usually had friends that were much older than her. Morgan, in an interview, talked about how Sheila tended to be sour towards people. She'd been worried from the beginning that Skylar had been falling into a bad crowd with Rachel and Sheila. Skylar's cousin Kyle, who also went to that school, talked about how he also felt uneasy with Skylar being friends with those two girls. The three of them were inseparable, and by sophomore year, Skylar started to act more like them than herself, or at least the version of Skylar that everyone knew. Some students told the writers, Darlene and Barry and Jeffrey Fuller that I mentioned earlier, that by middle of sophomore year, the three girls started to fall apart. In their book, they wrote, called The Savage Murder of Skylar Neese, The Truth Behind the Headlines, they talked about this. So 6 months before her murder, Skylar, Sheila, and Rachel were hanging out, and Skylar made a little video. But the subject matter was about dying. So it's like, you can see them, they're all, like, talking. It'd be like us hanging out, and, like, one of us just had the phone on, like, recording. And Sheila is seen asking Rachel and Skylar which way they would rather be killed. She says, "Would you guys rather suffocate or get shot?" "In the head. Drowning or suffocating." And they both said getting shot and drowning. You can also hear Skylar say drowning and suffocating are basically the same thing. It was known that Sheila and Rachel started to say mean things about Skylar behind her back, and they would put her down. They would all fight, especially Skylar and Sheila. The month before her death was the worst of it. It felt like Rachel and Sheila wanted to push Skylar away. Skylar started to make vague posts about the issues. On May 31st, 2012, she wrote, You're a two-faced bitch and obviously fucking stupid if you thought I wouldn't find out. And too bad my friends are having lives without me." Students started talking about how they had overheard Sheila and Rachel talking about the best way to kill someone. One of Rachel's friends said that Rachel was venting to her about Skylar and how much she didn't like her, and even said, "I wouldn't mind if she died at this point." On July 5th, 2012, Skylar posted, "You doing shit like that is why I never completely trusted you." The afternoon before she went missing, she posted, "Sick of being at fucking home. Thanks, friends. Love hanging out with you, too." Mm. The question of motive was on everyone's mind. So a rumor surfaced that Rachel and Sheila had started a sexual relationship and Skylar knew and threatened to out them. And maybe that was their motive. In July 2014, a plea deal is reached and Sheila finally pleads guilty. Her attorney read a statement to the court on behalf of her and her family, Sheila sitting quietly next to him. He said, "My client and her family recognize that the niece family is in a constant state of despair, loneliness, and sadness as a result of Skylar's death." Sheila was sentenced to life in prison with parole eligibility in 15 years. Then it was time for Rachel's sentencing. The niece family was present for both court hearings. Rachel's went a little differently. True to her pattern, she does the opposite of Sheila. She doesn't just sit there quietly. She reads a letter to the niece family and the entire court. She says, "I don't know if there's a proper way to make this apology because there are not even words to describe the guilt and the remorse that I feel each day for what I have done. I became scared and caught up in something I did not want to do. I never realized the gravity of my actions and how many people I hurt." So after she's done, she sits back down and Dave, Skylar's father, gets up to address the judge and the courtroom. He says, "Yes, Rachel Schulf did cooperate, and Rachel Schulf also had murdered my daughter in cold blood. She can take her apologies and everything else and sit on them because that's about what they're worth to me and my wife. She has done nothing but make our lives a living hell since day one." Rachel was sentenced to 30 years in prison with parole eligibility in 10 years. In the Dateline interview, Dave and Mary talk about how they regretted not knowing the girls better, about knowing more about Skylar's life because they didn't really know a whole lot about what was going on. They just kind of stayed out of it because they didn't want to, like, overstep. It's hard. Being a parent is hard. Finding that boundary, I feel like, is impossible, especially when your kid's a teenager. So the students of University High were forever changed because of this tragedy, especially the ones close to Sheila and Rachel. They were all tricked and manipulated. There was a memorial held in the place where Skylar was found, and there's a small garden there. It gets visitors often. Dave said, "I wanted to take the horrible thing that happened here and try to turn it into something good. A place that people can come and remember Skylar and remember the good little girl that she was and not the little beast that they treated her like." Something pretty incredible that was created because of this horrific event. Thanks to her parents, Skylar's Law was created and passed. It modifies the Amber Alert plan and what requirements need to be met to issue one. It now issues an immediate public announcement when any child is reported missing and in danger, no matter what, even if it is unknown if the child may have been kidnapped. It was approved by the West Virginia House of Delegates on March 27, 2013, with a 98-0 vote. And on April 12, 2013, the West Virginia Senate unanimously passed the law. They made a few small adjustments that were agreed upon. West Virginia Governor Earl Ray Toblin signed the legislation into law in May 2013. Now law enforcement is required by law to issue an Amber Alert even if they suspect a teen has just run away.
Yeah, because why would you take the risk?
Exactly. Also, if you remember, I said that Rachel would be up for parole in 10 years from her sentencing. Ladies and beans, her hearing was on May 9th, 2023, and she was denied. This is what happened. During her testimony portion of the hearing, she said that she and Sheila were in a relationship at the time and felt that if they were exposed, they would face consequences. She said, "After things became known with the relationship, there was tension between us. It was hostile and violent. In our teenage minds, we didn't know how to handle the conflict, and we just wanted it to stop." She told the parole board that she had been under the influence of marijuana at the time, that she had done it on the way to the spot where they murdered Skylar. The board then asked her what she would say to the niece family now. So she said, "I know I can't express how sorry I am for what I have done and for the pain I have caused. I loved her. I know what we did was terrible, and there's no words to describe the pain that we have caused, and I know there is nothing I can say or do. I just pray for them all the time and pray for peace in their heart. I would trade places with Skylar so she could be with her loved ones. I just want them to know how deeply sorry I am." Now, as I have mentioned in other cases too, the family or families get a chance to talk at parole board hearings as well. They get to speak about how it has affected them and be a voice for their loved one that is no longer there. This was no different. Dave, her father spoke at the parole hearing, and his statement I have as well. So grab your mugs, because this is powerful. Ladies and gentlemen of the West Virginia Parole Board, thank you for the opportunity to tell you why I believe this inmate should not be granted parole. Because of that malicious monster, my child never got a limo for her prom. Instead, she got a ride in a coroner's vehicle. Also, there was no sparkling gown for Skylar, just a body bag. She will never have a certificate for graduation, only a death certificate. This narcissist, first-degree, cold-blooded killer is not sorry for the brutal murder of my only child. It's my belief that she is proud she murdered my daughter in cold blood. The day after she plunged kitchen knives into my child, this devil was seen at a friend's boat smiling and posing for photographs. The date of July 6, 2012 was chosen for a specific reason. You see, this beast wanted the killing out of the way before she left for church camp. Just another task to mark off of her list, like standing over my child saying, "Die, bitch," as my baby girl took her last breath because the evil butcher didn't want to be her friend. I wasn't there to defend my baby girl from this diabolical killer on July 6, 2012, but I'm here today to do everything within my power to make sure she stays behind bars. This inmate has proven that she is both evil and mentally unstable. No one can fix that kind of madness. I believe if she is paroled, she will kill again. Murder is a game to this inmate. Ladies and gentlemen, that is insanity. This person has proved to be a narcissist and is a dangerous person who has no remorse in the least. This inmate has destroyed so many lives when she murdered Skylar. This inmate is just the rat that narked and got a deal. Yes, she showed us where she murdered Skylar, yet she is also the narcissist liar that put my daughter in that place. This monster is a danger to society. If released, no parent can close their eyes at night without fear that their own child could possibly be the next victim. This vicious murderer sits here today asking for a second chance. I ask you, where is Skylar's second chance? Where was her second chance when this monster counted to three and began to slash and stab my only child? I don't want to live in a world without Skylar, but I have to. I want to make sure it's as safe as possible from predators like this one. I ask that you deny parole for this diabolical butcher and allow Skylar's mother and I the knowledge that her killer will not be granted the reality of adulthood that our daughter was never allowed to experience. So Rachel is still in Lane Correctional Center and is set to be released in April 2028. Sheila is also there, and her parole hearing is set to be in May 2028. In another article I read about updates with these two women, it said that Rachel actually got married. So she married a fellow inmate named Amy Cobb, and Amy Cobb was a nurse who was arrested on March 12, 2016 for credit card theft and fraud, and she pleaded guilty and was also charged with a few other things, and her release was on June 17th, 2021. So she's out of prison and still maintaining the relationship with Rachel, who is still in prison. But I didn't see much about Sheila, only that she has never given a why. She won't say anything about a why she murdered. She remains silent on that. But I wanted to end all of this honoring how Skylar's parents wanted her to be remembered. So they said they want her to be remembered for the happy, loving little girl that she was and for her smile that they said could light up a room. And that is the horribly sad and heartbreaking story of Skylar Niece. Any final sips? Did you know the case?
I did. I know I had heard of Skylar's Law. Mm. And then as soon as you started talking about her friends, I was like, they kill her. I know this is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I think you kind of brushed over it a little bit. Like, just being a parent is hard, but I don't want to say like you have the right to know who your children are hanging out with, but like, if you need to really look into who your kids are hanging out with, it's okay. Like, yeah. Don't feel like you're, I don't feel like necessarily that that's a bad thing. If you're like, I just want to know more about your friends, mm-hmm. please, before you go off with them. I know that I have friends who are parents that are like, I just, especially like sleepovers and things like that, I'm definitely not letting my kids sleep over at a house where I don't know the parent or I don't know the kid or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. So I don't know. I guess it's just look out for each other. Think about the people you spend your time with and help each other out. If you see someone hanging out with someone that kind of sucks, I know it's hard, but maybe say something. Try to be a good friend to them and be like, hey, you don't have to hang out with those people that suck. You can come hang out with me. Let's go get ice cream or something silly. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just so unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were just talking about today about how teenagers at a certain age, they stop listening to their parents and start listening to their peers and their friends and stuff around them. So I think it becomes important that, like, parents think it's important for them to have good, like the parenting is a big deal when they're a teenager. But they spend a lot of their time listening to, and if I had two mouths and I could speak at the same time, it would be, yes, your parenting is so important. And then also, yes, also the people that they spend their time with, their peers, are who they respect and listen to and get all their information from. And, well, my friend told me this, and this person at school said this, and all this kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. it's just important to make sure that they have good friends around them, because we've done cases with full adults that get high on each other's supply and then decide to just, like, kill people. Mm-hmm. So who's to say that teens can't do that as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My final sip is this. Being a kid is hard. I would never wish to go back and go through middle school and high school again. Kids can be mean. Kids can also be incredibly wonderful and sweet. They're both things. And there's so much going on with you as a teenager. It can be scary to talk about things that you're feeling or experiencing. But I want everyone to know that it is okay to talk to someone. Someone that you trust. It can be someone in your family or another friend. And I know that you don't have to be friends with everyone. Like, know that. Like, I think that was one of the biggest things when I got older that I realized. Like, oh, you don't have to be friends with everybody. Oh, you don't have to be the popular kid. But you feel that so much stress and that pressure when you're in school. And Skylar was hanging out with these girls because they were, like, those popular, the popular mean girls. Like, that's what they were. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, it's really sad that she lost touch with Morgan, you know, and kind of more focused on this because she felt maybe, I don't know, maybe she felt that there were a lot of pressures for her to do that. I don't know, but it just seems so unnecessary. It seems so necessary when you're in it, when you're, like, surrounded by your peers, right? Like, mm-hmm. you were saying, it's just so you feel like you have to do all that. But I promise you don't.
Yeah,
like,
that's your whole life, yeah. right? Like, school is all you have.
All
you
of it.
Go to school, those mm-hmm. are all your friends. You have to make friends with those people, or, like, be kind or want those people to like you, because you're going to see them every single day.
Yeah.
So it's, like, so freeing and lovely when you finally go, like, oh my God, I'm not gonna have to see you.
I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, your real friends will stick with you.
Yeah.
No matter what happens, like, your entire life. Like, I'm not forgetting rid of you ladies. But yeah, and then, like, we were kind of saying this too. If you find that you are around someone or a certain friend, you just kind of, I don't know, get, like, weird vibes, or they say things that you don't like, it is okay to not be friends with that person. Which is another hard thing to, like, realize, because you don't want to make anyone upset. You don't want to upset, you know, this person who's supposed to be your friend. But if they're toxic or not bringing anything, any value to your friendship, or it's very one-sided, like, that's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of realizing that is also a big kind of weight off your shoulders. But, and then, like, with the two girls saying, I don't know, like, their whole reason, the motive behind it that Rachel came out and said about them being in a secret relationship and, like, not wanting it to get out, that's scary. Sure, like, loving someone that maybe your family or your religion won't agree with is scary, and, like, that's a lot of what's going on right now, but it does not justify murdering anybody. Like, either way.
Sorry,
like,
this is an audio format. No, it does not.
No,
sorry, we're just sitting here with big shaking our heads. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, we're not. No. You can't see us.
And it's like, and that's both sides. It does not, like, not agreeing with who somebody loves also does not justify that type of behavior. Nothing justifies murder. Nothing. You do not have the right, as I've said many times, no one has the right to say that this person doesn't get to live anymore. That's another person's life.
And what's hilarious and ironic about all that stuff, and awful and terrible at the same time, two mouths, is their entire lives became about her after that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, we just don't like her. Well, now your whole life's about her.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Get good.
Good job.
Yeah. Good job. That's, like, mm-hmm. the one thing about murder, too, that I'm like, well, that's your whole, everything kind of becomes, you can totally be like, I'm somebody that would just move on and live my life and do my thing. And it's like, yeah, but, like, you're not the one watching yourself at all times mm-hmm. either. So, you know, it's just like, you literally found a paper trail of how one of the girls slowly lost it. You know,
yeah.
like, I'm sure they both thought that they would just have it and be fine. Like, mm-hmm. so... It's
yeah.
it's you just don't know how you're gonna act once it's happening, and then
there it is.
And then it's all you have. You have to constantly keep that secret, hope nobody saw you do anything. I hope they don't put together that I bought these things 3 years apart. And, yeah. I hope nobody knows the, like, I hope I did keep my cell phone off the whole time, or I had a second cell phone, or, like, you just have to think about all that stuff when you could just leave them and ghost her and just never talk about it and move on with your life and just go to a movie. Like, you could have just done that instead.
Exactly. Yeah. And Skylar should still be alive. Yeah. Like, none of that should have happened. She should have been able to have, you know, real friends that actually loved her, didn't pretend to love her. Like, that's just lying to her face for months. That's not helping anybody. Like you said, like, that's literally what becomes their whole life, and then she's just getting lied to. Like, just let it go.
It's like, she snuck out of her house in the middle of the night. You could have just let her sleep. Like, if you don't want to hang out with her, just don't hang out with her. Just let her sleep, dude. It's fine.
Yeah. And with her friend Morgan, she should have been able to see Morgan walk down the aisle and vice versa. Like, those plans they had since they were little kids. And I don't know, Rachel and Sheila took all of that away.
By the way.
Yeah, you did.
I did. And I did walk down the aisle at my friend Laura's wedding. And it was awesome. I'd known her since I was 2 years old.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I don't know. Just Rachel and Sheila took it all. And, like, for what? They were afraid of consequences in a relationship, but they weren't afraid of consequences for a murder. Like, that's also it. Like, they just, their brains didn't, I don't know. Teen brains, you know, they're all developing in a different way. But, like, I just find it fascinating that, like, that's not something. And, like, one girl being super religious, too. Like, murder didn't, that wasn't a big consequence for you? Murdering someone? I don't know. I just want everyone to just love each other and not worry about things. I don't know. This case made me really sad. I mean, every case makes me sad. I just can't imagine how Skylar felt, like, in those last moments with her two best friends and what they did to her. Mm-hmm. It's just absolutely heartbreaking. Well,
and all the time up to that point, right? Like, all the kind of emotional abuse and stuff like that up until that point. And I know that, like, every girl has their version of that story in junior high school and high school of, like, the friends that did the thing and the thing happened and it was bad and traumatizing and makes you second guess your female friendships, like, forever until you find new, you know. It's like, I don't know a person that doesn't have that story. Like, every single person I've spoken to has had, like, a crazy junior high school betrayal, hormonal, terrible, three-way phone call, tweet. Now with this social media, you get the video of you giving somebody a hand job posted on school things. You know, like, I can't even imagine what it must be like to be a teenager now. I'm so grateful that, like, all of my shenanigans and chicanery happened at a time when we didn't really have cameras. Like, readily disposable available
cameras that, like, you maybe get your stuff, you know, developed or something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I remember what happened when this photo was taken, but there's no other evidence. It's just, like, a picture of you in a pool.
It was always stories. It was always stories. That's what you always had, and not, like, the tweeting at the exact moment you thought of a thing or, you know. So, it must be so hard to be a teenager right now.
Yeah. It was, like, to bring it back to Skylar, I do love that, like, there was her father and mother, like, really did stuff to try to make something positive with, like, something so horrible and horrific. And, like, creating Skylar's Law.
That's great.
It's just incredible to, like, just help for the future, right? And it's just really a beautiful thing that came out of something just so incredibly, like, there aren't even enough words to describe how awful and how heartbreaking that all must still be. You know, that's not something that you ever get over.
No, especially because it was her friends. Or people that just you saw her with a lot or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or even if you got a bad vibe from those people, it's like, yeah. There's tons of people that give bad vibes that don't kill their friends. You know, like there's tons of, like, kids that are like, I don't fucking like this kid, but it's my kid's friend, and I don't know, you know, that do not kill their daughter. So it's like, how could they have even, like, known or had any idea?
No, you can't know.
And teenagers can be very hyperbolic and use big language. So, like, talking about killing somebody, it just has to get followed up. Mm-hmm. It's like, why wouldn't you, like, if the kid's missing, why wouldn't you just go check? Like, why wouldn't you want to do that? If someone talks about killing somebody, because I think I remember this case, too, like, kids at school were saying that they would overhear them in, like, science class. They overheard them saying that they were going to kill them. Like so nonchalant. Mm-hmm. It's just wild.
It is wild. Ah, this was another heavy one, and I know that I could use an entire pot of coffee for comfort.
Use a lobotomy.
Oh, no. thank you so much for joining us, Beans, and for all of your amazing support. We cannot thank you enough. So go prep your next brew and join us here again on this little podcast that we like to call
Morty Lagers.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I don't know what that was.
I sound like Aurora.
Yeah. Just hear the dogs in the other room.
Thank you for listening to Morning Murders.
Keep checking our page for new episodes and special guests.
Want to learn more? Swing by our Instagram to check out more information from our episodes. At Morning Murders, that's MourningMurders.
Also, you can always check out some mental health links and our episodes resources in our show notes.
If you enjoyed listening to our highly caffeinated conversation, please leave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends.
If you have any stories you'd like to hear discussed around the Breakfast Nook, email us at morningmurders@gmail.com.
Thank you for listening.
We did it. We're here.
We did it.
We're nailing it.
Are we getting nailed? Whoa. Wait a minute.
Hold on.
Nailed It. Also a fun show about...
Really funny
cooking.
I've been watching Crime Scene Kitchen.
I love Crime Scene Kitchen!
As well as Is It Cake.
Oh, I don't like the host of Is It Cake, so I can't watch it.
Okay.
He bothers
me. That's fair. I like to do the, Is It Cake?
Is It Cake?
I got it wrong! Oh my god!
That is cool.
I like that part. But I do like Crime Scene Kitchen a lot.
It's so fun!
Have you seen that one?
No!
It's cool! So what they do is like... They set up the crime scene kitchen. It's like got like remnants of like what was baked in there, mm-hmm. and then the teams have to figure out what it is.
Oh, fun!
They like go in the trash and they're like, okay, so they threw it. There's eggshells in here, so they used eggs. Okay, this, and then they'll have like three different types of flour on the table, but only one is open and used, and you have to pay attention to that kind of stuff. And so at the end, it's not so much just did you make something that tastes good, but who gets the closest to the ingredients and what they were supposed to have made.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
It's so fun. Now what they're doing is it's like self-taught bakers versus professional bakers.
Oh, fun.
So they are now down to, they're going to combine the two groups now, which is really exciting.
Because they've had like eliminations of just the home bakers and eliminations of just the professional bakers. And then eventually now there's only like two of each team. So they're going to merge it all together and it'll be versus last man standing.
Yeah.
But pretty cool. What's his face is the host.
Joel McHale.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Oh, that's good. He's a silly dude. And they have lots of really silly people on that show, too. A lot of people. Yeah. They had Kate McKinnon? My brain is like going... Meredith from The Office.
Ah, yeah.
they had her on there the other day, and I was like, hey, that's cool. Like, what about everybody?
It's a very fun show.
Sorry, that's my brain went derp, derp, derp.
You're okay. I don't
know. You made
really
it.
Bad with names.
I got there.
We made it. Brenna. Brenna, na, na, na.
Brenna,
Brenna,
na, Brenna,
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 Brenna, Brenna, Brenna,
Brenna,
Brenna,
Brenna,
Brenna.
Brenna,
Brenna, Brenna, Brenna,
keep talking, Amanda.
Brenna, Brenna,
Brenna, Brenna,
Amanda.
Brenna,
hey, Brenna.
Hey,
Brenna.
Hey,
Amanda, Amanda, Amanda,
Amanda,
Amanda,
Amanda,
Amanda,
Amanda,
Amanda, Amanda.
It's Nicole.
The exact position, or it doesn't work. It's really dumb.
Oh, they had these batteries. Okay, so I went to the smoke shop with my husband, and they had these batteries. They were for 5/8 or 5/10 thread, right? So like for a regular bait pen, but they were little bears. They were little cute bears, and they came in all these different colors. And then they just had, you know, on buttons, whatever. I'm like, I want a bear.
A little bear.
Want a bear? I did not price them out though. But maybe one day we'll all have bears.
Maybe one day we will all be bears.
God,
be bears.
One can only hope to be a bear.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you guys ready?
Turn around and be a bear and be a bear.
Okay. I'm curious if you guys know this story or not.